Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. I am Jerem Jordan. This is our Big 12 Football Media Day special, part two. We had too many good interviews from Spencer Linton, who went to Frisco, Texas, and talked to a ton of players, coaches, administrators, and media from around the league. Over the course of the next hour, you'll hear from some of the best conversations he had during Media Days, including BYU Athletic Director Brian Santiago, on how the Cougars are attracting more top athletes in the nation in this new era. But first, one of the top voices in the sport is ESPN's Greg McElroy, who discussed why he still has high expectations for the Cougars, despite having a new signal caller in Provo, and why he turned down an offer from BYU to play at Alabama.
Now that you've done more than 200 interviews, we're going to take you into the next level as you close out Big 12 Media Days, but you've had plenty of time to assess all the quarterback play in this conference. Certainly BYU is one of the bigger question marks. Yeah. Where are you on the panic meter with BYU football at quarterback because Jake Retzlaff is no longer there?
I'm not panicking at all because I believe quarterback play is as much about the people around you as it is about the person. And I think it's a real nice luxury to know that this is an offense that is not going to be exclusively on the quarterback's shoulders. It's never been that way. And there have been years, too, like think about how many years in the past where we've gone into a season thinking, all right, BYU's in good shape at quarterback, and then it was like, ooh, that wasn't so good. And then there's years where like, I don't know about this young Zach Wilson kid. We'll see. And then it was great. You know what I mean? And I remember that vividly in 2019, calling a game at Tennessee, and they're 30 seconds left in the game, and they're on their 8-yard line. He goes down, leads into a comeback victory on the road in Neyland in overtime, and then beats SC the following week. It's like, this guy can go. No one knew who he was 2 weeks earlier. So I think I trust Kalani. I trust the system. I trust the identity and the culture. And I just am not that concerned about it because you have two guys that play college football and a really talented freshman. So roll the dice and just surround them and try to compliment them the best way possible. I think you'll be just fine.
Why do you think the term game manager has a negative connotation in football?
Because we live in a highlight reel society. And if you make a really good check at the line of scrimmage and all of a sudden that run now goes from a gain of 2 to a gain of 9, that's not making SportsCenter. Like, if I hit a CNI single between first and second base, and I'm Ichiro, and I have 210 hits a year, but all I'm doing is just slapping ground balls and beating them out to first, it's not going to make – no one's going to show my plays. They're going to show me the home run that the guy has – I don't remember the Mariners player now that's rolling, but you know who I'm talking about.
Cal Raleigh.
Raleigh, yeah. I was about to say Cal Raleigh. It took me a second. I know his nickname. I wasn't going to say that. but anyways – I just kind of look at where we're at society and, like, we really value highlight reel plays. There's a reason why Lamar Jackson's popularity is just so off the charts because he does the unthinkable on the football field. There's a reason why Patrick Mahomes is the most popular player in the NFL because he does things that you can't comprehend. But people kind of lose sight and lose appreciation for the guys that absolutely carve you up with 6, 7, 8 yard gains like Tom Brady's. The best of all time has more rings than anybody. Why? Because he absolutely lit you up throwing hitches and slants over and over and over again. And he could throw it down the field too, but the highlight reels plays that Tom Brady made aren't going to be the same as the highlight reel plays you see from Lamar and you see from Patrick Mahomes. So I think there's a place in the world for game managers. I just don't think society's quite ready to celebrate it. I think it's highly important. I think all the guys that are electric too, they also have to manage the game as well, or else they won't find success.
On that note, fair to say if BYU has a guy like McKay Hillstead or Trayson Bourget or Bear Buckmeyer step in, and this year they are a game manager, would that be a good result for this BYU football team?
Well, optically this year, the expectations across the board in the league are great quarterback play wins championships because there's so many good ones here, and we're just a year removed from watching, you know, Sam Levitt play incredible football and lead ASU to a title. So it's understandable that we're kind of living in that era right now. But I also look, too, like Rocco Becht last year, statistically speaking, is not, like, outrageous. But you know what Rocco Becht does? He knows exactly what the down and distance is. He knows exactly what play to check into. He doesn't make huge mistakes. And he just manages the game and absolutely crushes it. So the two guys that managed the game extremely well last year were playing in the title game. Some of the most talented guys were not. Why is that? I think there's a real give and take there. So I think it's something to be watched. If I'm BYU, look, I would love to have a veteran guy back, knowing how many veterans I'm competing against. But at the same time, it's not the end of the world. I fully trust the offensive staff to put whoever it is that ends up winning the quarterback job in a good spot to be successful because of the defense they'll play and because of the run game that they'll establish.
Greg McElroy of ESPN is on BYU Sports Nation. You're 2-0 calling BYU games. How do we get your production schedule to put you back on a BYU game?
Yeah, I mean, 2-0 and like two outrageously insane finishes. A win against Tennessee on the road and a win against USC at home. So, yeah, I mean, I love going to Provo. I've only been once, obviously called the one in Neyland a few years back. But I think it's a super special place. And it's like anytime you can go on vacation and call a game, it's a pretty good place to be. I feel like, especially as you're sitting there in the press box, you can quite literally ski into the stadium. I don't know if that's possible. I'm probably not going to try it, but it's just a neat place, and I've always enjoyed the culture. I have a great relationship with Kalani. I just have a lot of respect for him. Like, he is who he is. He really practiced what he preaches. He believes in what he believes, and I'm inspired by that, and have been since he got the job, frankly. So I just couldn't be happier for what the program's at. And I think they're going to have a great year. I really am hopeful that they can.
You played high school football at South Lake Kara with McKay Jacobson. I know that there are some BYU fans who will know that once upon a time you got an offer from Bronco Mendenhall to go to BYU. What do you remember about that interaction with Bronco?
Well, it was kind of amazing because we were up there. And, of course, like, the staff at the time was, like, a really impressive staff. Several have gone on to, like, do a really cool stuff. And several, I think, are back and are there at Utah. They've, you know, trade places all the time. But it was a cool staff. I remember going in. We were in the weight room, and we had gone to camp. And camp went real well. And they're like, we'd like to extend an offer. And I'm like, okay, that's awesome. I really appreciate it. I know McKay's coming here. You know, it would be fun to come up here and live it up. And they said, well, we need to tell you about the honor code. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. That's really cool. Good to hear. And like, you can't do this, can't do that, can't do this, can't do that. Like, well, I kind of like beer. You know, it wasn't the right fit for me, but it was for McKay. And it's a really a special place and a neat spot, and a place that I really have come to enjoy visiting and look forward to hopefully doing many more games in the future.
All right, last question. As a high-level quarterback yourself and a guy who watches that position with a lot of clarity and understanding, what advice, if you're in the room, would you give to the three BYU quarterbacks competing for that spot in a really shortened time frame?
Yeah, okay. The big thing, if I were coaching young quarterbacks, touchdowns, checkdowns. That's it, all right? So, like, if it's there, take it. If it's not, like, you never go broke. Tom Moore told us this in the NFL. You never go broke putting money in the bank. A positive gain is a positive gain. Like, take the five-yard gain. Don't try to be Superman. Don't try to show off how great you are. Like, if a guy's open underneath, take it. Don't wait for the guy to potentially come open down the field when you can just take this and live to play second and three. Because in second and three, your play caller is probably pretty dang good. All of us are. So I think that's the big key is, like, don't try to be a hero. Don't try to do too much. Just be patient. Allow the game to come to you. There will come a time and a place when you have to win the game with your arm. That will happen for everybody. There's going to come a time and a place when you have to fit it into a window that's about this big. Yes, there's a time and a place for that, and it means you're down seven and a got-to-have-it situation. But it's not on first and 10 in the second quarter. Be smart. Be methodical. Understand situationally what it's going to take to move the chains, and I think just make the most of your opportunity, man, because college football is short. Your life as a college football player is short. Like, enjoy it. I put way too much pressure on myself in college. Like, I don't want to say I was miserable, but I was a lot more miserable than I should have been. You know what I mean? And I think you need to just enjoy the ride, enjoy your teammates, enjoy the relationships, lean into those, and like let the game do what the game does. Like, be yourself. You're at BYU because you're good. And lean into that and give yourself a shot.
Great perspective. Greg, we appreciate the time and your busy schedule. Like you said, don't blink. You wake up, you got three kids, and the football days are over, right?
Long gone. Yeah, long gone. I can barely walk without being sore tomorrow. So it's all good now.
Thanks again.
Appreciate it.
That's some great advice. And hey, we've got some great root beer in Provo. Ask Brick Oven. After the break, Athletic Director Brian Santiago on how BYU's landing some of the best athletes in the country in recruiting and where the Cougars have grown since joining the Big 12 Conference as BYU Sports Nation's Big 12 Media Day special continues. Welcome back to our Best of Big 12 Football Media Days BYU Sports Nation special. Cougar Athletic Director Brian Santiago has had a lot on his plate over the past few months since taking over for Tom Homo. He spoke with Spencer to discuss where BYU's grown since joining the Big 12, expectations for the upcoming season, and how the Cougars continue to crush it in recruiting.
Brian, you've been very vocal, especially on our show, about the momentum and the energy within BYU athletics right now. And certainly football plays a huge role in that. So to be here and experience football media day, what has your juices flowing today when it comes to the excitement about BYU football?
Spencer, it's always exciting when you start talking about football because it just means fall is close. The season's on the horizon, and we have great momentum. I talk about it often, and it starts and stops with Kalani Sitake. He's one of the most respected men in the room. I just left a room with Kenny Dillingham from Arizona State, Scott Frost from UCF. You had these great coaches in the room. The respect in the room for Kalani Sitake, when you get to walk the path with a coach like that, that's what gets me super excited. And then, like, I look at these five players that we brought down here and was with them last night, and I'm thinking, you know what, if we're going to battle in this world of college sports, I want to go to battle with those guys. And that's what gets my juices flowing is I just think that we have great leadership.
Well, let's call a timeout just for a second on football, because I want to bring up something Brett Yormark talked about when he referenced BYU's multiple cross-country national championships and then Megan Hunter as the winner of the Bob Bowlesby Award. What did it mean to you as the athletic director to hear those names and those teams mentioned by the commissioner of the conference at football media days?
Yeah, it's exciting and it's humbling, right? And for me, the thought that we get to be in this game of college sports with some of the best coaches and student athletes in the game, and to have Megan Hunter called out, who it's one of the great stories to me in the history of college sports. For her to come forth triumphant like she has, to win at the level she's winning, is both miraculous and inspiring. And then she's coached by one of the great coaches in all of the sport, Diljit Taylor, who's an unbelievable leader of women and empowering women right now across the world. You have Ed Eystone winning national championships. They showed highlights of both of them lifting the trophy. I think that there's great respect in the Big 12, but I think that's a tribute to all of our coaches, all of those that have been involved in preparing us to enter the Big 12. We always felt like when we came into the Big 12, we would be prepared to compete at the highest level right off the bat. And that's a tribute to our coaches and student athletes over time that prepared us so well to make this move. And now to feel like we're nationally relevant, to feel like we are chasing greatness together is super inspiring. And to be able to do it the BYU way and not shy away from exactly who we are and what we represent, that was also in the messaging from Kalani and others about who we are, right? It's on the forefront of everybody's minds. And I love that we have coaches and others that are going to stand up with confidence and talk about the greatness of BYU for precisely who we are and who we represent.
Well, the theme that you have presented here is great respect for all of these coaches and certainly for Kalani. So going back to Coach Sitake, what do you feel like is creating a scenario where players are just naturally gravitating toward him more and to BYU and are willing to embrace the honor code and what BYU athletics is all about? What's happening there with Coach Sitake and the culture?
Yeah, I think that over time he's built a culture of greatness on the football field, but people are starting to understand who he is as a human being and they want to be a part of it. His leadership is off the charts. It's next level. And to hear our student athletes talk about him, I slipped into some interviews and heard our five student athletes talking about why they choose BYU and why recruits are choosing BYU. Spencer, we're seeing a remarkable movement right now in nationally recognized recruits choosing BYU precisely for what BYU is and what we represent. Like there's a clear reason why they're choosing BYU. We feel like it's a competitive advantage. The honor code, the representation of everything that's good in life, I think that's precisely why these student-athletes are choosing BYU, our current student-athletes, but you can feel it. It's a culture that's been built and where they really feel like they can prepare for and get ready for the NFL. chase their dreams on the football field, but also prepare for life and go make a difference and go change the world. Like, it doesn't get any better. And it gets me super excited. You know, we've got, like, you start talking about recently, there was a big announcement, you know, Ryder Lyons going on TV telling the world that he's choosing BYU. AJ DeBanza choosing BYU. Kihei Akina, one of the great golfers in the world, says, I want to be at BYU. Jane Hendergren, who's breaking all sorts of records, saying, I want to be at BYU. I think that there's a clarity of why they're choosing BYU, and I think it's because they understand exactly what BYU is, what it represents to the world, and all the goodness and the sponsoring institution. It's really exciting. That's what gets me super excited, is we can go and chase greatness, but do it in a way that's going to bring positive light to not only the athletic department, the university, but the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. When you put all that together, like, let's go. Amazing things happen.
Certainly that excitement is palpable, and I can see it on your face. You know, you exude it, and everybody around the country is noticing it. But that's not to say your first few months haven't encountered some adversity and some challenges. I mean, the day you were officially hired, you came and said, we got to lock down our basketball coach. We got it. And you locked him up to a long-term deal, and he wants to be at BYU. And then the quarterback room gets kind of thrown upside down with something that matters a lot to BYU, and upholding the honor code and working through that. So how have you been able to navigate those challenges and still maintain, like, hey, we are who we are, and we believe in integrity, and the honor code matters? Like, how have you been able to kind of keep that in line with the adversity that comes from it sometimes?
Spencer, adversity makes us stronger. That's just a principle. And when we manage adversity, and we can always look to the positive and the things that we have to be grateful for. You know, I've had an opportunity to be in this position for a couple of months, and I just get super excited about the fact that some incredible things have happened in the 2 months that we've been doing this and we launched into it, that we've had great momentum coming in. But you think about the announcements that have been made. You think about Yegor Demin going number 8 in the NBA draft and telling the world how he feels about BYU. You think about Kevin Young choosing BYU. I think about Kalani Sitake on a couple of occasions choosing BYU. Like, when they've had opportunities to go, and they're choosing BYU. If that doesn't get Cougar Nation excited, that the best coaches in the world are choosing BYU, the student athletes are choosing BYU, I just get excited, because adversity is going to come. But it's how we handle it. The other part of this that's great is we're not on an island by ourselves. We have incredible leadership at the university level, starting with President Reese, Keith Borkink, all the way up the line to our board of trustees. Like, everybody's aligned in the mission of this great university. So when adversity hits, there's great conversation that happens. There's great care for the individual. There's great care for the human element. And you want to handle these things. You can't forget the human element. We're dealing with people's lives, and you just want to help them prepare to go make a difference in the world, wherever that may be. But when they come to BYU, it's our responsibility to help them along their path in preparation for what's going to come after football, what's going to come after sport. And what we want to do is prepare them to go out and make a huge difference in the world and bring positive light to what we feel is the reason we're doing this, is to bring light to the Savior, Jesus Christ. That's who we are at the core. And that's super exciting, and it bodes well for the future of BYU athletics.
BYU Athletic Director Brian Santiago is on BYU Sports Nation. You're the ultimate competitor. And again, you just talked about working through adversity. If you are, and I'm not telling you to step on the coach's toes at all here, but you're a great motivator. So if you're in that quarterback's room and you're looking at Treyson Borgay and McKay Hillstead and Bear Bachmeyer and the opportunity that's in front of them, what's your message to those guys as they battle it out to be the starting quarterback at an institution like BYU with the history of great quarterbacks that they have?
4 words. We believe in you. I think those are 4 of the most powerful words. We've been taught that by one of our great coaches at BYU. But I would also tell them, And not only do we believe in you, but fellas, walk into that room with those other 120 guys and look around. You got a brotherhood that's going to rally around you like never before. You got a Cougar Nation that's going to rally around you like never before. And if we're going to face this challenge, we're going to face it together. Unified, let's go. And as I say, vamos, we got this. That's what I'd say to them.
I know that this is a loaded question, but with the evolving culture of college sports, rev share in place, NIL shifting, obviously BYU's great support from those groups and the boosters and the alumni base. How do you sustain it, not just for a year or 2 years, but for the foreseeable future, and make this a long-standing thing where you feel like BYU is going to be competitive for a long time in those regards?
We're blessed at BYU to be partnered with the very, very best corporate sponsors and companies in the world that are invested in BYU for who we are. Mm-hmm. And a Cougar Nation and a fan base that wants to invest in the student athletes. I've been asked a lot the last several weeks about, Brian, what does the athletic department need? What do you need from us? And it's a real simple answer. We need you to invest in the student athletes and to continue investing in the student athletes in their lives, because if we invest in our student athletes, if we invest in our coaches, if every day everything we do is to lift, build, and empower these student athletes and coaches, the long-term sustainability of what we're building is going to continue to grow and be better and better and better. And we're super fortunate that we've built something special, but what we're going to continue building is even going to be more special, because I really believe people want to invest in the individual lives of these student athletes, and that's something that I think will prove long-term sustainable as we chase greatness. I have to say, the other thing that comes to mind is I'm so impressed with our coaches. And I'm not just talking about our head coaches. Like, we have some of the most phenomenal assistant coaches, people that can lead out. I just started thinking about those quarterbacks, like how fortunate they are to have Aaron Roderick in the room, how fortunate they are to have guys like Fessy Satake, all these incredible coaches that are going to lead our team forward. I think about all of our sports. It gets me excited, because you want to be led by great people that really know how to coach and help these student athletes chase their dreams. So I just think the long-term sustainability is right where it needs to be, because we've planned well, we have great leaders, and we're going to manage our resources the right way.
Brian Santiago on BYU Sports Nation. I just think about what BYU's done with a minimal share of TV revenue. Like, so how will the full allotment that BYU is now positioning to receive from TV revenues and whatnot help you moving forward, knowing what you did when you were working with not a full bag of chips?
Yeah, it's one of the strengths of BYU. We've always managed resource well. I think that principle comes from the church, our sponsoring institution. And so I think as we move forward and more resources become available, we're already prepared, because we're going to make sound decisions and we're going to use those resources wisely to reinvest in not only our programs, but to invest in the right people. I've said it a few times. If we continue to invest resource in the right people, the right leaders, and the right student athletes, we're going to be able to continue to tell the world our story through the remarkable lives of these student athletes and coaches. And so that's what we're passionate about. And I'm super grateful to be part of a team in athletics and at the university where we've already planned for these times. We're way ahead of the game when it comes to managing our resources and planning well, so that when the whole landscape of college athletics switches and shifts, and let's be honest, I mean, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, none of us could have imagined this, but on the horizon, we could see some of these things coming, and we've prepared well for it. We have a great team put together and we're going to continue to invest in the right people. And as we do that, I think Cougar Nation will be excited about what happens.
Brian, great stuff. I hope amidst your walks at night with your lovely wife, Kim, when you get home, there's still some time for some ice cream, because I know you got that sweet tooth, brother.
Yeah, everybody knows that I have an issue with ice cream. But you know what? You always need a little sweet to end the day, right?
Nothing wrong with an 11 p.m. ice cream, okay?
You got to have a little sweet at the end of the day. Thanks.
Thanks, Brian.
Appreciate you.
Hey, let's get this man some delicious BYU Creamery ice cream. Perhaps Blue Goggles will do the trick. Up next, CBS Sports' Shehan Jeyaraja once picked BYU to win the Big 12 live on BYU Sports Nation. Has his opinion on the Cougars changed with a new guy at QB? This is BYU Sports Nation. Welcome back to our Best of Big 12 Football Media Days BYU Sports Nation special. I'm Jerem Jordan. Earlier this summer, CBS Sports' Shehan Jeyaraja joined BYU Sports Nation after calling the Cougars the most underrated team in America, and then proceeded to pick BYU to win the Big 12 on our show. Well, with the change at quarterback, how is he feeling about the Cougars now?
Shehan, it's good to see you in person, not through a camera, here at Big 12 Football Media Days. What's this experience like for you as you handle the conference that arguably has the most parity of any conference in America?
Well, it's a lot of fun, and I mean, look, I've been to a lot of media days, and the Big 12 does it right. You got lots of access, lots of people around, lots of great media outlets here. But, you know, it's fascinating coming into this year, because I'd say that there are kind of tiers right now in the conference, right? There's kind of that top tier of teams, you know, and I think that BYU is on that range, Kansas State, Arizona State, Baylor, Texas Tech, obviously a fascinating team. But after last year, you really can't say that anything's too definitive. I remember doing an interview here last year and telling an Arizona State outlet, like, yeah, I think maybe they can make a bowl game, and they go on and win the dang league. So it's a lot of fun, and you get to learn so much at an event like this.
You speak of BYU, and a few weeks ago on BYU Sports Nation, of course, this is still with Jake Retzlaff in play, you said, I think BYU is a team that could legitimately win the conference. Now assessing their quarterback situation with the expected transfer of Jake and the three largely unproven quarterbacks, how does that shift your expectations for the Cougars?
Well, I think that the floor goes down, right? That's the biggest thing that you have to say. You knew what you had with Jake Retzlaff there. You knew what he brought to the table. I don't think that certainly it changes everything, because BYU is a defensive-led team. You look at what Jay Hill's done there at defensive coordinator, some of the guys they bring back, some of the guys they brought in. This is still going to be one of the best rosters and most talented teams. But the question for me, and this is really a big thing when I evaluate the conference at large, is where is that explosiveness offensively going to come from? You know, I think that last year, obviously, Jake was able to bring in. I think that 2 years ago, that was a struggle for BYU and some of the reasons that they struggled. I think that maybe Chase Roberts could bring some of it. I think that LJ Martin might be one of the most underrated players in the Big 12. If he can stay healthy, I think that makes things a lot easier. But you do have to say, right, like, without certainty at that quarterback position and without guys who have played in 2 years on campus, it just makes it a lot harder to project.
Yeah, BYU, understandably, is one of the more intriguing scenarios here in the Big 12. If you were to do a preseason poll right now, and they've done away with it because it was so bad last year, Sean. It was so bad. We're not doing it anymore. Where would you place a team like BYU in your own personal Big 12 preseason poll?
I think that I'd have them right around 5. And again, right on the edge of being in that top group, I think that I'd say. I think that the other four teams that I mentioned, Baylor, Texas Tech, Arizona State, Kansas State, I'd probably comfortably have ahead of them. But BYU, TCU, Kansas, they're kind of right on that cusp, right in that next tier. Maybe you throw a Utah in there as well. And again, like, you look at this conference, there are at least 9 or 10 teams that have the upside of making it to Arlington and having a chance to win a Big 12 championship. So I don't think they're in the top group. I think they're just below that.
Brett Yormark notably said the current college football playoff construct might not be the best scenario for us right now, or at least what they're pushing forward for with 5 AQs and 11 at large. He said, we believe that is the clear right format. It doesn't necessarily help us right now, but we believe it will in the future. How do you assess the Big 12's role in the CFP with that vision that he presented?
Well, I think that people are being a little short-sighted, I think, because there's two pieces of this. One, if you look back, the last many years, the Big 12 would have had two teams a lot of years in the top 12. Last year was a little bit of a down year for the conference because you just had some transition. You obviously had so many new teams coming in. It was just a little bit of a tumultuous year. I don't think that that's definitive of what this conference is going to be. The other piece of it, too, is that long term, if you look at it, if you set yourself in a scenario where one conference has four guaranteed spots and you have two, you are fundamentally treating yourself as a lesser conference, right? And you're fundamentally treating yourself as a not as power conference. Now, I think in this new world, right, there are a big two, there are kind of a middle two, and then there's kind of everybody else. But I don't think that you need to formalize it necessarily in too many ways. And again, if you look at the Big 12 last year, they would have been guaranteed almost to get two teams in if it was a 16-team college football playoff. And by the way, you know, obviously Arizona State, Iowa State, BYU were right there. Like, it wouldn't have been impossible to see them get three, depending on some things work out. So I think it's a smart move by the Big 12 to kind of say, hey, we're not going to throw away everything that we think just because our one year didn't go our way. And again, I think that you just can't approach it from too much of a reactionary perspective, because otherwise you're changing things every single year.
Sean J. Raja is with us on BYU Sports Nation. A couple of things really quickly. I need to compliment you on your jacket here today. It's gotten a lot of attention, not a shocker. Where'd you pick up this beautiful coat?
Oh, off the sale rack, man. Off the sale rack at Saks Fifth Avenue at Grapevine Mills Mall right here in DFW. So if you want a good deal, make sure and check it out there.
And secondly, many of our listeners have enjoyed and watchers have enjoyed your time on BYU Sports Nation. You are one of the rising star of the Football Writers Association of America. Congratulations on getting that award.
Thank you. You know, it's been a really incredible couple of weeks for me, you know, just with some of the stuff I've been able to do and hearing about that award. And, you know, actually, I got to say, Kalani Sitake came into the room upstairs and he congratulated me immediately, which I had no idea that anybody knew about this stuff, and said, I hope I had some small piece in being able to help you get it. And I mean, it's just been so cool, especially in this conference that I have so much background, to have people and have coaches that I have such relationships with. And again, I feel a little old to be winning a Rising Star Award, but I will certainly take it. So thank you so much.
Nonsense. Anybody that can pull off that jacket is nowhere close to old, Sean. Okay, speaking of rising, I know you have BYU in your preseason poll right around number five in that top part of the second tier. But who is the team this year that you believe could shock people like Arizona State or BYU did last year?
Well, I think it's been interesting to me to see some of like these preseason odds, because I didn't expect Utah to be mentioned as much as they were. I saw them as more of a dark horse type team. So, you know, I'd probably have them 8 or 9 in my preseason poll. But that's a team that I think, you know, again, you look the last 2 years, they were picked number one in each of their respective conferences and fell on their face in a lot of ways. But this is an offense with Devin Dampier coming in and Jason Bett coming in that I think has a lot of upside and has a lot of explosion. And it won't be as bad as it's been in years past. One other team that I'll mention, though, that's more of like a crazy riser is Houston. You look at the way that they finished last year, the way that they played defense in the month of November, they were a special team. Now, they had to replace their defensive coordinator, but they brought in another great one in Austin Armstrong from Florida. And offensively, they've got a quarterback in Connor Wegman, who is not the five-star that he was billed potentially, but he is a good player. He's got a good supporting cast around him. They've got some receivers, and you trust Willie Fritz to figure out an offense. So I think that's a team that could go from maybe you'd consider them in the 12 to 14 range to maybe finishing in the top half.
Sean, great stuff. Congratulations again on your award, and we'll talk to you again soon on BYU Sports Nation.
Thank you so much for having me.
What a suit coat. And yes, we are hoping the Cougars in blue will also surprise people as well. Coming up next, Chris Vanini of The Athletic details why he believes the Big 12 has a really good case to be not just the deepest, but the strongest conference in America. This is BYU Sports Nation. Welcome back to our Best of Big 12 Football Media Days BYU Sports Nation special. Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark likes to reference the league as being the deepest conference in America. The Athletic's Chris Vanini spoke with Spencer Linton at Big 12 Media Days on why he believes the league has a case to be made that it's not just the deepest, but the toughest conference in America.
Chris, I mentioned this to you this morning, but you've gone BYU viral again by posting a tweet saying that as you talk to BYU opponents, a lot of the players mentioned Provo as a weirdly friendly place to go and that they look forward to going there. How long did it take you to gather that information before you put it out on social media?
Yeah, so we're just asking a lot of players a bunch of different things kind of about the conference, and that was one of the questions. And we got quite a few people who said BYU, and that fans were saying good luck to them. Fans, players said they were weirdly nice. They said fans stuck around and cleaned up the garbage after the game, and they had not experienced that at all. One player, I don't remember who it was exactly yet, said it was the worst place for whatever reason, but it was everyone else was the complete opposite end of it. So apparently players enjoyed going to BYU.
So everybody but one said it was mostly a weirdly nice place. BYU and Utah were also recently featured in The Athletic talking about the greatest rivalries, but the Utes and Cougars are not featured in the top 25 of said list. You didn't write that, but one of your cohorts. So how do you view that BYU-Utah rivalry dynamic in the grand scheme of the greatest rivalries in college sports?
It's certainly up there. It depends. Everybody kind of has their own criteria on how to evaluate it. It's a game that hasn't had a lot of top 25 matchups, for example. But there is a lot of, obviously, hatred and stuff like that. So how do you kind of balance those two? And everybody kind of does it a little bit differently. I know Scott put a ton of work into. He had so many spreadsheets and months of data he'd been compiling on it. I know Utah and BYU fans were not happy about it, and that's fine. That's the point of the list. You know, we don't make the list for everybody to say it's a great list. You know, I rank every college football team, and nobody ever says that. So everybody just kind of has their own thing, but it's certainly up there. I think we saw what happened at the end of last year's game was another example of that. I'm glad it's back. I'm glad they're in the same conference here, and this game is happening, and that the Big 12 protects it as one of the rivalries. So it's certainly right up there.
You've never had an angry fan tweet at you, right?
Never. You know, I rank all, it'll be 136 teams now every Sunday during the season, and just comes with the territory, and you expect that. And especially on social media, I know BYU fans are vocal.
Speaking of rankings, there's no preseason poll for the Big 12. But again, you rank all 136 teams, not just in the Big 12, but across all of Division I football. Where does BYU currently sit in the Chris Vanini rankings, both in the Big 12 and nationally, with the quarterback room in question?
I haven't done it yet because they didn't ask us this year, so I hadn't actually gone through the whole thought process yet, but I'll put the whole rankings together probably early August. But a lot of it just kind of weighs on Jake Fretz's status. It seems like he's probably not going to be back. If he was, you know, I had BYU right up there, Arizona State right up there, Kansas State. There's like three or four teams. You can tell by the betting odds. Like, there's no clear favorite for this conference. And it's not that there isn't somebody who could win. There's a lot of really good teams that bring a lot back. And BYU was one of them. The quarterback's going to be potentially a major question mark now. And it may just take a couple of games of figuring out who that is and how that's going. And that's one of the reasons why the Big 12 didn't want to do the poll. Arizona State was picked last by us last year. And that probably hurt their perception going in. And so I understand the conference doing that, especially in this conference, because everybody's so close. There's not that much of a difference between 1 and 10. And so it's going to be hard to pick.
Along with the parity of the Big 12, what makes covering this conference the most intriguing for you as a college football insider and reporter?
Well, it's every game, anything can happen. We went into – there was a four-way tie atop the conference last year. You know, we went into – I'm at Texas A&M last year, and after the game – we have to keep watching some of the late Big 12 games because it's going to impact the tiebreaker of who's going to get to play in the championship game, because the conferences are so big and we don't have divisions anymore that we have weird tiebreakers determining things. So many different factors go into it. But, like, I don't even know who's going to be last picked last this year. Maybe Houston. But, like, even Houston had some big wins last year. So, like, we saw what Kansas did the second half of the season after they had a slow start. So there really is no off weeks, and I know it's a cliche, but top to bottom, especially you look at the bottom, I think this is the strongest conference in the country. Now, that's not necessarily good for the Big 12 because you need a couple of teams to emerge and get in that playoff contention, but depth-wise, it's incredible.
All right, we'll finish with this. Speaking of the college football playoff, if you're choosing your desired format and making any tweaks, I've heard all conferences need to play the same number of games, whether it's 8 or 9, and some other factors that go into it, 16 teams, 5 AQs plus 11. What would Chris Vanini do with the college football playoff format?
I'd leave it the way it is. I thought 12 was great. I thought the first round byes were great. I thought everything worked out well, and we got that cutoff point where, like, did 3-loss Alabama have to be in the playoff? Not really. I think it was pretty clear there's you know, maybe 6, 7, 8 teams in a given year that could win the national championship. You threw a couple more spots on top of that. If we go to 16 or 14, you're going to have even more teams with a debate to get in. I don't like the auto bid stuff. I think it's very confusing for everybody. But we're probably going to have – we might have 4 different playoff formats in 4 years, going from, what, 23 to 26. I don't think that's good for the sport either to keep changing. I thought 12 was great. It made the regular season matter more. It made your conference championship matter. Further expansion is just going to kind of water that down, but ultimately every conference has to do what's best for them, and the ones that are in charge are trying to do that.
Plenty to write about, no doubt about it, and keeping you busy. Do you like the tweak to do the playoff with the 12 teams in a general straight order with the conference champions not getting the first 4 seeds?
I get why they did it. I didn't like it because I'd like the conference championship to mean something, and I think moving forward now, conference championship is not going to mean nearly as much. And maybe we're already there. Like Georgia, Texas, did they need to play that game? And Carson Beck gets hurt. You know, so like maybe we're already at that point. But, you know, I grew up where conference championship was the number one goal. And especially taking away the advantage of those byes, it's not going to happen anymore. Now I get it. All the teams that got the byes lost. So maybe it wasn't an advantage in the end. But it's just more of a shift of the most important thing in the sport is the playoff, and I don't think that's good.
We love your insight and your perspective, and some unique perspectives at that. Look forward to your 1 through 136 rankings coming out in early August. And again, remind BYU fans how they can find your great work.
Yeah, on The Athletic, I know people didn't like the ranking of the rivalry, but I did put the Holy War rivalry as the number 4 best rivalry nickname. I know the schools don't love using that name. It's unofficial or whatever, but I very much enjoy it.
Chris, we appreciate the time. A man of the people.
Good to be here.
BYU and Utah. We can't wait. Still to come, linebacker Jack Kelly is poised to have a big-time senior season. What did he do to improve this offseason? And with the uncertainty at quarterback, does the defense feel more pressure to step up? This is BYU Sports Nation. Welcome back to our Best of Big 12 Football Media Days BYU Sports Nation Special. I am Jerem Dorn. BYU outside linebacker Jack Kelly could often be misconstrued as Christian Bale's character by the same name in Newsies. While he may not be singing solos on the field, he's been singing the praises of his teammates and is ready for a monster senior season.
As you assess BYU's defense coming off an 11-2 season, again, you're right there. I mean, you're in the college football playoff conversation for much of the year. What do you feel like you've done as a unit this offseason to get better, to try and take that next step?
I think just trusted the process. Our strength coaches have done a phenomenal job at implementing things that they've seen deficiencies in, and we've really attacked those, worked on those. Like last week we did some maxing out, and Coach Phillips showed us the numbers, and everyone is up on numbers. So it's been a great offseason. Everyone's getting stronger, faster, getting lean, but also putting on weight. So we've attacked the little things that they've noticed, and I think this year is going to be great.
When you say deficiencies, how specific can you be in that regard? I don't know how much you want to reveal there, but like what were those deficiencies that you're trying to get better with?
A couple I'll name is just like strength. So we got stronger, body weight, got heavier, and then speed just got faster. So those are the 3 I want to name right now.
What's the key to putting on weight but being faster, Jack? That doesn't you get heavier but you're faster. That doesn't compute. So how does that work?
I think Coach Phyllis and Coach Sky, all of our strength coaches, do a phenomenal job about, and Coach Dan, our nutritionist. He does a great job about feeding us the right things while trusting Phyllis's plan for us to continue speed training and giving us the right recovery that we need to build those fast twitch muscles and get them firing on a consistent basis.
What did a full campaign for you in the Big 12 do to get you ready for what you hope is an unforgettable 2025?
I think just gave me the experience of what to expect. Like coming into last year, I never played Power 4 football. This year, I'm going to have that experience. So I think it's going to help me be able to teach the younger guys, which in turn is going to help me also learn from them. So I think just having that experience is going to make me smarter, faster, not have to think about it.
The message from, in large part, the outside world, the college football analysts is, well, BYU's dealing with a little bit of an upheaval at quarterback, and the offense might take some time to get going. At least the defense is awesome. How do you handle the additional pressure that sometimes gets heaped on in those circumstances?
I mean, we don't buy into any of that. Like, the outside is going to say what they want to say. At the end of the day, we have coaches who recruit guys to play for this program. So we have guys that are ready to step up and play. So at the end of the day, we're just going to trust that. We're going to do our job, focus on what we need to do, and trust that our coaches are going to put the right guys on the field.
It's tough to ask the defense to do more when you look at some of the numbers. I mean, historic in a lot of ways, the numbers that were put together by Jay Hill at defense. So what kind of standard are you holding yourself to coming off a season that was so good?
Just to get better. We know that last year was last year. 2025, we haven't done anything yet. We haven't proved anything. So we just need to continue to get better day by day, improve the things that we know we need to improve on, and just put in the extra little work that might propel us to be even better than last year.
The linebacker specifically adds Ciale Acera in the middle to you and Isaiah. What do people need to know about a guy like Ciale?
He's physical and fast. He played D-tackle in high school, so he's a bigger body, but he's still got the speed. So he's gonna bring the boom, and he's got IQ. He's smart. He's a guy that we've been bonding with for these years, so he's got the camaraderie. He's a guy that we're going to be able to have come in and trust him.
What will change for the linebackers this year, schematically, and from what you're doing, if anything at all?
As of right now, I don't know too much. I think it's going to be pretty similar to how it was last year. Obviously, we're going to have our game plans and things like that, but overall, I think it's going to be the same just kind of thing that we did last year.
The defensive front, the guys specifically in front of you, there's a lot of changeover, led by Keanu Tanuvasa. So what are your expectations for the front four and how that filters back to what you're going to do at linebacker?
I mean, I can't even put into words what I expect out of them. Him, Kirkland, JT, our ends with Logan Latui, Tau Seeley, Bodie. Like, we got a stacked front. That's just going to help me and the other linebackers just be able to do our job that much easier. Like, if they want to come off of double teams on our D linemen to come climb to the linebackers, they're going to make the play because that's how good they are.
You mentioned you had your first go-around with Power 4 football, and in a conference that is just loaded with parity. I mean, it's splitting hairs sometimes when you look at just how close these teams are to each other, talent and competitive-wise. So what is it going to take for BYU to find the magic again, to be in that top tier of the Big 12 when teams are so close?
I think last year what helped us was the bonding and team camaraderie that we had. So I think this year we got to continue to harp and buy into that. As long as we trust each other, when those games come down to the end, we're going to have the faith and trust in each other that we're going to be able to get it done. And I think that's really what wins games, is in those hard times, that camaraderie that we have built.
Certainly having a staff that is largely carried over and provided some continuity helps in that regard. So how has the staff helped the culture of BYU football improve year after year?
I mean, last year was, from when I first transferred into the season, it was a like total black and white change from how the culture was before. So I think they've done a phenomenal job about setting the standard and making sure that we execute that standard. If someone's not executing it, they're going to talk to you, help you change it. And if you're not going to change, then they don't want you to be on the team at the end of the day. So they've done a great job at setting the standard and making sure we uphold that standard.
What's the key to getting through a situation where there is uncertainty at quarterback? Because you said you're trying to block it out. So I know that's – you say that, but it's tough to do. So how do you work through that as the offense tries to figure it out and the defense kind of just keeps doing their thing?
I mean, honestly, I haven't thought about it too much. We've – all just been taking it day by day, like going through each workout, making sure we have the best workout that day. I think as long as we do that, we're going to be good. Like I said, our coaches are going to recruit guys that they know can play at this level, and they're going to put that guy on the field, whether whoever it is, and we're going to trust them and believe in them.
All right, we'll finish with this. You're going to play in some unique venues in the Big 12 this year, notably Ames against Iowa State, Texas Tech you get in Lubbock, some other trips in there. Which road trip are you excited about and venue to play in this year?
I think probably Texas Tech. I've seen pictures of it, and that stadium looks amazing. Their fan base is awesome, and I think that'll be a really fun game to play at.
Let's go. Let's get Jack Kelly in Lubbock. Yeah. Hey, appreciate the time, Jack. Good luck to you, and good luck surviving the rest of Big 12 Media Day.
All right, thank you so much.
Jack and the Cougs have ambitious goals for the season, which is exactly 36 days away. Bum, 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 bum. That concludes our Best of Big 12 Football Media Days BYU Sports Nation special. This show featured just a few of our interviews from it. Check out the rest on our BYU Sports Nation YouTube channel. Thanks to today's guests, Brian Santiago, Greg McElroy, Jahan Jayaraja, Chris Vanini, and Jack Kelly. Sorry to Dennis Pitta, we ran out of time. And thank you for joining us. For everyone on our BYU Sports Nation crew, I'm Jerem Jordan. Go Cougs!